Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the aspartame update when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What's wrong with the Ten Commandments? It's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, practicing them in our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. And you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, commandments, and penalties, as well as the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. Now, you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effects. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. So you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. All right, last time we were talking about the history behind this thing of aspartame. We started off with 1969. It's the G.D. Searle Company that invented the product. They were looking for a medicine to treat peptic ulcers. That's what they thought they were going to use it for. Discovered the stuff was really sweet and said, gee, can we sell this? Now, normally when you take these chemical drugs like this in small quantities, you know, tablets and pills, you know, one or two at a time, they're toxic, they have side effects, all drugs do, but it isn't nearly as bad as when you're trying to replace sugar with it and you're taking this stuff in large quantities, large doses. Now think about how many aspirin you take a day, and then compare that with how much sugar you're consuming every day, and what do you think would happen if you took that many aspirin? Or that many Bufferin, or ibuprofen, or Tylenol, or something else. You know, if you got a headache and you take a couple of Tylenol, and okay, well maybe it fixes your headache, maybe it doesn't. But if you were using Tylenol like you use artificial sweetener, and you were taking that kind of quantity into your body, do you think maybe you might suffer from Tylenol poisoning, or some other kind of side effect? Well, the Searle Company over here had a long history here between 1969 and 1977 of lying, using false science, and just outright bribes hiring people. And this guy Skinner, where we broke off last night, remember Samuel Skinner? He was the Attorney General. It was U.S. Attorney Samuel Skinner. He was given the job of conducting a grand jury investigation of the tests on two Searle products, NutraSweet, and then a drug to treat high blood pressure. Well, Skinner removed himself from the case 2 months later because of anticipated employment with the law firm of Sidley and Austin, who at the time were defending Searle in the investigation. Now, isn't that just special? Now, this guy Skinner is presently Secretary of the U.S. Department of Transportation. His department is responsible for overseeing the transportation and handling of hazardous materials, including the imports of aspartame products shipped from the NutraSweet company by Searle's Japanese licensee. Now, Samuel Skinner isn't in government, to my knowledge, in the Obama administration, but, you know, this was written a couple, 3 years ago, when he was the Secretary of Transportation, Samuel Skinner. See this revolving door? You see, first of all, he's working for government, and then he leaves government and goes to work for a private law firm, and then, like as not, he goes to work for the Searle or Monsanto company. And talk about conflict of interest, you know. This is the nuts and bolts of how this thing works. Now, Searle was not a newcomer to grand jury proceedings based on falsified and inaccurate test reports submitted to the FDA. In 1975, the Justice Department had instituted proceedings against Searle based on findings in animal studies for two drug products, Flagyl and Aldecton, two Searle drugs which are on the market even now. This was another case in which there were problems with false and inaccurate reporting of tumor findings. There was still an additional Searle drug whose testing was very questionable and which came under fire by Adrian Gross. It took Searle 2 years to respond, but the answer only raised more questions. Now, Dr. Marvin Legator, professor and director of environmental toxicology at the University of Texas, who helped pioneer the mutagenicity testing at the FDA, is quoted as saying that all of the Searle tests are scientifically irresponsible and disgraceful. It is ironic that the FDA used guidelines recommended by Searle in developing the industry-wide FDA standards for good laboratory practices. Now, did you get that again? Let me read that to you again. It is ironic that the FDA used guidelines recommended by Searle in developing the industry-wide FDA standards for good laboratory practices. Excuse me. But it's the FDA's own investigations four times between 69 and 77 that uncovered the fact that Searle's laboratory testing procedures were disgraceful, that they were as phony as a $3 Fed note. And here we have the FDA adopting their recommendations. Hey, here's the way we think that these tests ought to be conducted. What do you think of that? Hey, do you think the FDA and Searle are in bed together? Hey, do you think maybe the FDA and the 16 drug manufacturing companies in America are all in bed together? Now, in 1977, Dr. William Conlon, senior assistant U.S. attorney, was assigned to the Searle case, but he took no action. On July 1st, Dr. Thomas Sullivan was appointed U.S. attorney. He also took no action on the Searle case. On July 20th, yet another letter was written by Richard Merrill, chief counsel for the FDA, to the office of Thomas Sullivan, reminding them of the repeated requests to start legal action against Searle. Despite the FDA's offers to provide any needed assistance, that is, needed evidence, names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, neither Sullivan nor Conlon took any action. Now, do you suppose maybe the AG's office was told by the president, hey, back off? Conlon finally reduced or ended his involvement in the investigation, and the 5-year statute of limitations for a grand jury investigation expired. 1 year later, Conlon took a position with Sidney and Austin, the law firm that was representing Searle. Now, are you going to sit there and say, oh, that's just incidental. That's just, you know, the way things happen. All right. Now, 1977, Donald Rumsfeld. He was the former member of Congress and chief of staff in the Ford administration. He was hired as Searle's president. What do you think of that? Here's Donald Rumsfeld. He's in the Ford administration during this very same period of time. Remember, Gerald Ford was president in 1976, 77, and 78. And here we are, 1977. Here's Donald Rumsfeld. He's the chief of staff to the president. Now, you'll notice Searle isn't being prosecuted by the Ford administration. Although the FDA, at least some of the officials in there, at least had the honesty and the integrity to say, hey, wait a minute, these guys have lied to us 4 times now, submitted false information. We think this is criminal. We think they ought to be prosecuted. Gets over to the Justice Department, and nobody prosecutes. Then when the statute of limitations runs out, then the U.S. attorney takes a job with the law firm that's representing Searle. Isn't that just real special? Now, you talk about something being transparent. Now, that's just about as transparent in criminal greed as you can get. Now, Mr. Dixon, then Searle's vice chairman, told the Wall Street Journal that without Rumsfeld, Searle would not have gotten approval for any drug that the FDA was investigating. Rumsfeld said he could handle aspartame as a legal rather than a scientific problem. In 1980, shortly after Reagan came into power, Rumsfeld was quoted as saying that he would call in all of his markers and that no matter what, he would see to it that aspartame would be approved that year. So Rumsfeld said, I'm going to call in all my markers. Well, now markers are favors that people owe you. Favors. And that's the way our Congress works here in this country for the rest of you people around the world. Our Congress is for sale, and it has been bought by the best money that Congress can be bought with. And so when we want something, let me give you an illustration. A guy by the name of Dick Armey, he was a representative from Texas. And there was a bill before Congress, didn't have anything to do with this particular subject matter, but he put a rider on the bill, snuck it in, you know, in the middle of the night. And what that writer said was that if a drug company is being sued by somebody who's taken a vaccine and it caused them some damage, that you can't sue a drug company for damages incurred from inoculations. Now, why would you want to do that? Why would anybody want to protect a particular industry? Let's try it this way. What if some guy put a rider on a bill that said you can't sue General Motors, Ford, or Chrysler, or maybe any manufacturer. You cannot sue any automobile manufacturer for a product that they sell and put on the market that kills people. What would you think of that? See, the Toyota company right now is facing these recalls over a problem that they had with their accelerator in their computer program. And evidently, when you step on the gas and you got this car in gear, you can't shift into neutral, nor you can't reach up and turn the switch off and shut the engine down. I don't know. It would seem like to me, I didn't drive their car, I don't know how technological this thing is, but several people reported on their cell phones that their car was accelerating, they were helpless and couldn't stop it, and slammed on the brakes wouldn't work, and couldn't shift it into neutral, and they couldn't shut the switch off. Couldn't shut the engine off. I don't know. You tell me. And 3 or 4 people got killed. Now, those people are going to sue Toyota for those wrongful deaths. Now, if it's good for us to sue Toyota or Ford or GM or somebody for a product liability, you know, a product that causes death, causes injury. Don't you think we should be able to sue the pharmaceutical companies for doing the same thing? Well, not anymore, you can't. Now, you know Dick Armey was working for the pharmaceutical industry. I don't know how much they paid him for that, but they paid him something for it. And here's Donald Rumsfeld. Now, he comes in to the new Republican administration here in 1981, and he says, I'm going to call in all my markers, all the favors that people owe me, and I'm going to get this aspartame approved for you. Now, Rumsfeld earned $2 million in salary and $1,500,000 in bonuses between 79 and 84. Rumsfeld, Searle's president, hires John Robson as executive vice president. He was a former lawyer with Sidley and Austin, Searle's law firm, and also served as chairman of the Civil Aeronautics Board, which was then connected to the Department of Transportation. A fellow by the name of Robert Shapiro comes in here. Now, Robert Shapiro, as general counsel, he's now head of Searle's NutraSweet division. He had been Robson's special assistant at the Department of Transportation. William Greener, Jr., as chief spokesman, he was a former spokesman in the Ford White House. I mean, these guys in government and in big business, you know, are just kind of buddy-buddy, aren't they? Now, I suppose that many of these relationships go clear back to college, you know, and when these people are in these prestigious universities like Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, and so on. And then they belong to secret organizations, you know, like Skull and Bones and other secret, you know, think tank operations. And then when they get into government, they get into business, you know, these people have an agenda. They have a worldwide agenda. And it encompasses things, you know, like the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission. And these think tanks and these people that are holding these jobs and these positions in business and in government, they have an agenda. One of the objectives on their agenda is to reduce the Earth's population by 90% by 2050, 40 years from now. 90%. Do you suppose maybe these drugs and these poisons in our food has something to do with that? Just thought I'd throw that out there. I don't know. You figure it out. Now, in 1977, Howard Roberts, acting director of the FDA's Bureau of Foods, in 1978 became vice president of the National Soft Drink Association. The National Soft Drink Association members are currently marketing a huge volume of diet drinks sweetened with NutraSweet. Gee, I wonder if there's any connection there. 1978, the Department of Psychology at Northeastern Illinois University and their studies of aspartame find, one, reproductive dysfunction in male and female animals, two, endocrine dysfunction, pituitary, thyroid, ovaries, and testes. 3. Increase in weight, and 4. Decrease in locomotor function. In 1978, proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States rises in blood phenylalanine may affect fetuses of mothers who carry the PKU gene, causing them to have lower IQ and higher incidence of developmental abnormalities. 1979, Science. Methanol is linked to fetal alcohol syndrome and diminished intellectual capacity in newborn rats. 1979. The New England Journal of Medicine said, elevated blood phenylalanine levels in PKU women result in a high incidence of birth defects. And Dr. Daniel Azernoff, head of Searle's Research and Development Division, stated that rats eating the required amount of DKP, that's aspartame breakdown product, had a statistically significant number of tumors in their wombs. In 1979, the FDA is required to review substantive objections before approving a product as a drug or food additive. Normally, public hearings are conducted by administrative law judges, and in this case, the FDA suggested instead that a public board of inquiry be formed, made up of three scientists rather than judges. In 1980, the public board of inquiry was impaneled with Peter J. Lampert, MD, professor and chairman at the Department of Pathology, University of California, San Diego, Vernon R. Young, PhD, professor of nutritional biochemistry at MIT, and chaired by Wally Nuta, MD, PhD, institute professor, Department of Psychology and Brain Science at MIT. Now, this board said that they had to rely on the findings of the UAREP members of the 1977 task force because they were denied access to the complete task force reports by FDA officials. So the board voted unanimously to recommend banning aspartame for human consumption. Now, remember, this UAREP was hired by, paid for, bribed by the Searle Company to put out the phony report that they did in 75 or 77. Remember that? I reported that to you in the last program. Well, Dr. Nuta expressed the board's concerns for the safety of aspartame because they did not investigate the validity of Searle's tests, but only their results. The board did conclude, however, that the available data on laboratory rats did not rule out the possibility of aspartame causing brain tumors, and that indeed the evidence suggested that aspartame might induce brain tumors. Now, here in the United States, we have a lot of brain tumors. Are they caused by aspartame? Maybe, maybe not. Not all brain tumors are caused by aspartame. But, you know, if we were to go back prior to 1981 and take a look at the incidence of brain tumors in the general population, and then take a look at the incidence of brain tumors in the general population after aspartame is introduced, and then ask ourselves, has there been a statistically significant incidence of an increase? And if there has, well, then maybe we ought to look into it a little bit more. If there hasn't, then you don't need to look there anymore. Now, that's kind of elementary. You don't have to be a real genius to start thinking about, well, gee, what would you do if you were trying to find out if there was a cause and effect relationship here? For instance, I've mentioned this a time or two. Over a period of 20 years, the consumption of soda pop in the United States doubled. And at the very same time, during the same 20 years, the incidence of diabetes doubled. Now, that does not prove that soda pop causes diabetes, but it sure as hell shows us that there's a potential there. There's something that ought to be investigated. We ought to look into this. And when those kinds of cases are brought up, the authorities ignore it. They just get as far away from that as they can. Why? Is it because that they don't want the answer? That's my conclusion. And we're not going to go there because we don't want to find out what's over there. And that is not where we're going. All right, 1979, remember, science is linked to fetal alcohol syndrome and diminished intellectual capacity in newborn rats. Now, this methanol over here is a deadly poison, and this thing called fetal alcohol syndrome, we know that alcoholic mothers who are pregnant, when they have babies, you take a look at what happens to this baby, and this baby turns out to be intellectually stunted. And we call that fetal alcohol syndrome. All right, methanol is a byproduct that comes from this thing of making alcohol. sometimes, you know, they'll be making this alcohol and they'll make a bad batch, you know, and it's got methanol in it and it kills some people. Now, that being the case, is the 10% methanol that's found in this aspartame over here statistically significant in causing fetal alcohol syndrome? We don't know that. We know that fetal alcohol syndrome is caused by alcohol, but if we were to investigate, if we wanted to spend some money, which, you know, we don't have any problem spending money on airplane crashes. An airplane crashes, we spend millions and millions of dollars reconstructing the event so that we can learn from that mistake. Don't you think we ought to do the same thing with these drugs? Now, to give you a quick illustration here as to how that deal works out, here in the United States, we have a drug czar here. And this drug czar is charged with stopping all of the illegal drugs coming into the United States, things like heroin, marijuana, crack, cocaine, and so on. And it's called the War on Drugs, and we're just spending money, and God, we're just down on this thing of illegal drugs. Now, at the very same time, we have a thriving drug industry in this country that deals with trillions of dollars a year worth of drugs. I say trillions. It's certainly hundreds of billions, and I think we're up into the trillions now, but it's a big bundle of money. In fact, medicine, which would include drugs, is 17% of our national economy. So we have a $14 trillion a year economy. So we take 14 times 0.17, and it's $2.38 trillion. You know, $2.3 trillion. That's $2,380 billion a year. Drugs are certainly a big part of that. And then we're spending all this money. Now, here's what the bitch is. These illegal drugs cause harm to people, and we're told that constantly. And in fact, statistically, people who ingest illegal drugs, like John Belushi, for instance, he was an entertainer over here. He was an actor on Saturday Night Live, a very popular TV program here in the United States. John Belushi died from an overdose of heroin. Now, nobody complained about the quality of the heroin that he took in. Nobody said, oh, John Belushi died because of dirty heroin. And the drug companies are constantly reminding us that, hey, we got to ban this stuff because we don't know how pure it is. It might be dirty. He died from an overdose of it. So he took too much of it. And so they want to eliminate that. Now, these illegal drugs in this country kill 6,000 people a year, like John Belushi. Write that down, boys and girls. 6,000 people a year die in the United States from illegal drugs. Now, let's try this one on. How about legal drugs? The drugs that come right out of your Rexall store or Osco Buttery, prescribed by your licensed, bona fide medical doctor. When they give you the wrong drug or the wrong amount of the drug or they don't give you enough of the drug or there's some problem with the drug, not that it's dirty. We're not complaining about dirty drugs now, just misapplications, wrong stuff. How many people die from their own prescription drugs prescribed by their medical doctors, licensed, bonded, and insured, with a proper legal prescription, paid cash money? How many people die of legal drugs? And the answer is 130,000. Let's start to think about this for a second. Here in the United States, we kill 130,000 people a year from legal drugs. 6,000 people a year are killed from illegal drugs. Ask yourself the question, which of these two enterprises threaten the most people? So let's try it this way. If we were to pass a law and ban all legal drugs, we'd save 130,000 lives a year. And if we just left the illegal drugs alone, I'm sure that 6,000 people a year would keep on dying, but we would save 123,000 more lives, wouldn't we? So now we get this big problem, and the president, he weighs in on it every once in a while. President Clinton back in 98 or 99 said, hey, we got this god-awful problem over here from drug overdoses and, you know, legal drugs, and we need to solve this problem. They call it a disgrace, a national disgrace. Well, hell, this aspartame's killing 100,000 people here, which is damn near as many people as are being killed by the legal drugs. Nobody is excited about that. Let an airplane crash. There was one crashed up here in New York, near Buffalo, New York, killed 50 people. Oh my God, it was on Frontline. It was on the news, and we spent millions of dollars to find out why those 50 people died. I would contend that 50 people compared to 100,000 or 130,000 or 6,000 is not worth talking about. Not worth talking about. You could abolish the Federal Aviation Agency. Just plain abolish them. You could leave the airlines to fixing their own airplanes and just take off all government regulation of the airlines in the morning. And those guys couldn't crash enough airplanes or kill enough people to come close to this 130,000 a year being killed by doctors and druggists and hospitals and et cetera. Let's figure this out. 130,000. Let me just plug this into my Texas Instruments computer here, my little calculator. 130,000. Now, if you take a 747 and you load the thing up, it hauls about 400 people. I think over in Japan, they got smaller people. I heard one time they had 500 seats in a 747. People are a little smaller over there. I guess you can get in more of them. But I'm going to just divide that by 400, okay? 400 people. That would mean that you'd have to crash 325 747s in a year. That's damn near one a day. One a day. What would you think about flying in an airplane with any airline, knowing that one airliner per day is going to crash in the United States of America? Well, there's some 16,000 airplane operations a day in the United States. 16,000. One out of every 16,000 would crash and kill 400 people, to equal the number of people that are being killed by your doctors and your druggists. That's why I say, I don't think that Americans can count very well, and I don't think they're able to think very well anymore. Not to think pragmatically about, well, what's the real threat here? There isn't any threat from airplane crashes, but there's a god-awful threat from legal drugs. There is some danger in taking heroin. The drug companies constantly point out to the purity. I have never heard of anybody dying because of the purity of the drugs that these people are selling. And I don't think that their drugs are too impure. They may be cut with sugar or something else so that they can make more money, which just makes a weaker product. And if you go to your drug dealer and he sells you a batch of cocaine, and it's cut with so much sugar that it isn't any good, you wouldn't buy it from him again, would you? And keep in mind that all these illegal drugs are being sold in the free marketplace, without any government controls or regulations. And it's a thriving business. Doesn't require any taxpayer dollars or government bailouts like your banks need. All right, we're at the halfway point here, so let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's eight schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And I should remind you that if you want a copy of that free General Law CD package and you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, and download that right off our archives page. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use in this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give concerning these books and periodicals and newsletters and so on don't mean that those people that we're recommending are going to recommend us. And keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're back. Let's talk about this analogy that I gave you here before we took our break. The point I'm making here is I'm not suggesting that we should abolish the FAA and let the airlines regulate themselves as to maintenance and the safety that they are responsible for in their maintenance programs and their hangars. But what I'd like to suggest is that we extrapolate that safety record from the FAA and airplanes and airliners, which is pretty damn safe, and apply that to the drug manufacturers and make the drug manufacturers, you know, like Searle and Monsanto and these other companies, you know, Merck and Pfizer and so on, make those people toe to the same line and hold them responsible. When they put out a vaccine that kills a bunch of people, I think they ought to pay for that. Just like Toyota should pay for the people that are killed with their product. Now, when one of these airliners crash, you don't hear this on the news, but you can rest assured that the survivors are being paid for with the insurance. See, that's why we carry insurance on these airplanes. That's so that when one of them crashes, you know, it pays off. And these people get paid millions of dollars. That's, you know, you kill 100 people on an airliner, now you're talking about big bucks. When that airliner, that 747 over Lockerbie, Scotland, crashed and killed 200 and some odd people there, 200-300 people, it bankrupted that airline. The ultimate end of the airline that was involved in that crash was their bankruptcy. And it wasn't even their fault. It was some guy got on there who was a bomber, and he set off a bomb and the airplane crashed. But see, the airline has to pay some of that damage. You know, they've got to buy the insurance and so on. And when people get killed, you know, well, how come you didn't keep those bombers off the airplane? And now, you know, it's your fault that my kid got killed and so on. And that's the bottom line. Now, why is it that we don't apply those same standards to the Searle Company and some of these other people out here? Now, the FDA is required to review substantive objections before approving a product such as a drug or a food additive. Normally, public hearings are conducted by administrative law judges. But in this case, instead of administrative law judges, what they've got is a panel of doctors. Not quite sure why they thought that they'd do better with the doctors, because when the doctors got through, they put the nix to it and they said, hey, this thing is so badly flawed that we're not even going to approve it. Now look at this, from 69, 12 years goes by, to 1981. As a scientific experiment, as a drug, as a sweetener, as a product for people to use, everybody that got involved in it said, hey, Searle, they're using fraud, flawed science. And finally, they got a political hack by the name of Donald Rumsfeld that says, I'm going to call in all my markers and I'm going to get this thing approved. We can't do it scientifically, so we'll just do it politically. I've got markers out there. These people owe me favors, and by God, I'm going to do it. Now, Rumsfeld, you know, he ends up being the CEO of Searle, and he gets paid several million dollars for his job there, you know, the CEO. Well, don't you think that Donald Rumsfeld here had some conflict of interest? Now, I'm not suggesting that you're going to vote this guy out of office or vote him in or something else. Now, wouldn't you think that the Obama administration ought to take a look at this and, hey, you know, let's do something about this aspartame, killing 100,000 people a year? Well, see, nobody can prove that it kills 100,000 a year. And the same thing is true with these drugs that doctors prescribe and they give them to them in hospitals. You know, doctors bury their mistakes. Doctors bury their mistakes. And so, you know, there are some malpractice suits and there are some cases that come to light, and we see the egregious behavior of hospitals and doctors and the cover-ups that go with it from time to time. But, you know, generally speaking, the average Joe Sixpack is much more concerned about an airplane crashing than about some woman dying over here because of her doctor gave her the wrong drug. All right, now 1980, this time the five-member commissioner's team of scientists was impaneled because of the negative findings of the Public Board of Inquiry. By now, there was so much data to look at that the members were given different assignments. Now, three members were asked to investigate the brain tumor issue, and two others were asked to look at the brain damage, mental retardation, and endocrine problems. The three members looking at the brain tumor studies expressed serious concern because the data showed that aspartame ingestion caused them. The two others expressed satisfaction that aspartame did not seem to cause any brain damage. Then, for some unexplained reason, a sixth member was appointed to the team, apparently to make it look like a deadlock. The end result was that three members pronounced aspartame safe and three concluded that aspartame was dangerous. Gee. Excuse me. Did you ever notice that when we appoint panels in government or on the Supreme Court, we always do an odd number so that we don't get deadlocked? All right. The deadlocked report carried great weight in getting aspartame approved by the FDA. Jacqueline Verrett, Ph.D., toxicologist and a senior member of the review team, was extremely critical of the way the review had been done. She stated, quote, it was pretty obvious that somewhere along the line the Bureau officials were working up to a whitewash. She said that the Bureau of Foods under Howard Roberts discarded or ignored problems and deficiencies outlined by the team report. In part, she said, it is unthinkable that any reputable toxicologist giving a completely objective evaluation of the data resulting from such a study could conclude anything other than that the study was uninterpretable and worthless and should be repeated as the safety questions remain unanswered. Yeah, you know, common sense ought to tell you. Since we can't trust this data, we have to do it over again. But they didn't. And then they're not going to now. I mean, you know, you're talking about billions and billions of dollars I don't know how many billions, but, you know, just the soft drink industry alone is $54 billion a year, and one-third of that is artificial sweeteners, and I think aspartame has 70% of that market. That's just one out of 6,000 products out there. No, you're not going to get aspartame out. Now that all of the food manufacturers have been using it now for 20 or 30 years, hell, those guys are making tons of money off of this. They're not going to take that off the market. And you cannot prove that aspartame kills a single person. By God, you know, that's been the argument. Now, you cannot prove that those drugs are killing a single person, but, you know, we sit here and we do statistical analysis, and we come to a conclusion, hey, legal drugs kill 130,000 people a year, illegal drugs kill 6. And by God, we're after those illegal drug dealers. Why? Well, because they're competition for the legal drug business, and we're not going to put up with any competition. Monopoly is the name of this game. And so the 16 legal manufacturers of drugs have enlisted the government with the police powers to go out there and put those upstarts and entrepreneurs out of business. That's what that's all about. They're just fighting over turf. And this aspartame over here, taken from brain damage in mice, 1980, from voluntary ingestion of glutamate and aspartate. Aspartate, salt of ascorbic acid, a component of aspartame, is glutamate's close structural analogy. We cannot take comfort, therefore, in the fact that humans have been exposed for many years without apparent harm. If harm did occur, we would not detect it except perhaps years later in the form of obesity or neuroendocrine disturbances such as are known to occur in rodents following glutenate treatment in infancy. Now, here in the United States, we got this god-awful obesity problem. Obesity. And it's been shown conclusively that this aspartame, these artificial sweeteners as a whole, but aspartame in particular, cause obesity. They cause people to gain weight. You want to lose weight, so you drink diet. See, they call it diet soda. Why don't we call these diet Big Macs or diet fries? Diet Burger King hamburgers. Diet. You know, we call it diet pop, diet Coke. Hell, there's nothing dietary about a hamburger that's got 2,000 calories in it. I don't know that it's got 2,000, but, you know, 2,000 is your daily calorie number. You know, they give you that new number now, so that's your minimum daily food requirements. You need 2,000 calories a day. Used to be 1,200 when I was a kid. 1,200. And now you got to have 2,000. I think they raised that because, you know, people were eating so damn much anyway, they had to come up with a logical number, so they said, yeah, 2,000, that sounds pretty good. Well, if you're going to consume 2,000 calories a day, you have to burn up 2,000 calories a day. If you're consuming 2,000 and you burn up 1,900, you're going to gain weight. And this artificial sweetener causes you to become addicted to the sweetener, and it causes you to eat more and to gain weight. That's one of the things that they've discovered about this. So if you want to go on a diet, the last thing you want to do is drink Diet Coke. If you want to gain weight, drink Diet Coke. I mean, if you're a skinny, undernourished runt out on the beach and somebody's kicking sand in your face, drink a Diet Coke. That's the solution to that. Satya Dubey, senior FDA statistician, stated in a memo that the brain tumor data was so worrisome he could not recommend approval of NutraSweet. 1981, Dr. Arthur Hull Hayes Jr. was appointed the new FDA commissioner in April of 1981. It is of interest to note that although the petition to approve aspartame was denied in September of 80, Searle waited until Reagan administration took office in January of 81 to reapply for approval. Reagan himself, however, has been quoted as saying, "We quit using the stuff because we just don't know what's in it." One could ask if he doesn't know who does. It appears that even Searle's own representatives are confused. Denise Ertel, Searle's public affairs director, has said, Phenylalanine is a fermentation byproduct of soybeans and corn. Aspartic acid is a total synthesis from hydrocarbons, petrochemical derivatives. Fairbanks RD and M. Koppel RD, nutrition counselors for Burson Marstler, Searle's PR firm, have said that neither one is a petrochemical derivative. Jerry Gull, MD, Searle's vice president of nutrition and medical affairs, has said that phenylalanine might not come from soybeans and corn. Phenylalanine might not come from soybeans and corn. Well, where does it come from? It's dirt cheap. It's probably, this is what they did, remember, in the aluminum industry, you know, they had this byproduct over here. Now they put it in our water. Now they, what's the name of that stuff? Now it starts with an F, I believe. I'll think of it here in a minute. Anyway, it was a deadly toxic poison. And so now they put it in the water supplies all over the United States. Needed to get rid of it. And so what are the better place to put it than people's water supply? All right. Well, now in July, Dr. Arthur Hull Hayes, Jr. overruled the Public Board of Inquiry's recommendation that aspartame should not be approved for marketing until further animal testing was conducted to resolve the brain tumor issue. Two FDA officials told Common Cause that Hayes made it clear that he wanted to push aspartame forward in order to signal that the Reagan administration was ushering in a new reform. So he granted approval of aspartame for use in dry foods and as a table sugar substitute, ignoring the fact that according to law, if tests were found to be inconclusive, an additive is not supposed to be approved by the FDA. So the law requires that the studies be conclusive. Remember, these studies were split 50-50. There were all these questions that came up over the years. The science couldn't be made to support it, and so they said, well, we'll just solve that problem. We'll do it politically. And they did. Since no new testing had been done by Searle, more than 90% of the questionable tests submitted to the FDA had been done prior to 76. So Hayes also cited a study done by a Japanese firm. Here's a Japanese firm. And Hayes said, well, look, we're relying upon this Japanese firm. Well, that firm in Japan was Searle's Japanese licensee to justify his decision, even though his study had never been examined. Now, get this. There's a company over in Japan that's licensed by the Searle company to make this product, aspartame. Well, isn't that just special? Well, hell, if you wanted a bunch of people, just license six people in six different countries and have them all come over here and say, hey, we think this stuff's great. All right. Well, so much for any objectivity that might be involved in this process. Dr. Alexander Schmidt, the FDA commissioner from 72 to 76, said in a 1984 interview that Searle's testing was incredibly sloppy, and what was discovered was reprehensible. He also said that some of Searle's tests were poorly conceived, carelessly executed, and inaccurately analyzed and reported. Searle and the FDA frequently and absurdly point to the fact that aspartame has been approved in more than 60 countries and by the World Health Organization as the evidence of safety, even though Robert Shapiro, head of NutraSweet, confirmed that the approvals had essentially been based on the inconclusive and controversial tests that had been submitted to the FDA. All right, so if you people in France are wondering, well, how in the hell did you get this stuff approved in France? Well, your FDA, or whatever you call it over in France, came over to our FDA and said, well, what do you think? And they said, hell, this is the greatest stuff since sliced white bread. And they said, well, if the Americans say it's good, it's got to be good. And the Germans and everybody else have done the same thing. Now, you got 90 countries in the world now. See, 90. And, hell, most of these countries around the world, you know, are famous for taking bribes, aren't they? Here in the United States, we deny it. You know, we would deny that any of our politicians take bribes. And they're right. By God, our politicians do not take bribes. They take campaign contributions. All right, so we got that out of the way. Searle and the FDA frequently cite these other countries around the world as being proof that their product is safe. Nobody has ever tested it at the governmental level. There have been some private tests done, and every one of those has turned up negative. Now, here's the problem with these tests. Let me just give you my view on it. Do you believe that George Gordon is going to go out and spend $500,000 to prove that aspartame is bad for you? Well, boys and girls, if you think George Gordon's going to spend 35 cents on the project, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again. Now, do you suppose that if it was necessary that the manufacturers of these products would spend $1 million, $5 million, or $20 million to prove that their product was good? In a heartbeat, they would. These same companies, if they were to put objective tests out there, if the FDA, you know, the people that we're paying our taxes to, were to go out here and spend $1 million bucks, now, I don't think it would take $1 million. I don't think it would take that. I showed you here a week or two ago, an 11-year-old girl did a scientific test to prove something. I think that an 11-year-old kid in a science lab of their grammar school could figure this out. But our public institutions don't do it because they're on the take from the corporations. And then they tell us, well, we went out and we did these tests, you know. Tests? Yeah, we got the results from Searle that made the product. Well, let me ask you this. If we went to General Motors and said, hey, why don't you test your cars and then give us the reports, and then the Department of Transportation will approve it based upon your tests? Why don't we let the airlines repair their airplanes and then let them file a report and say, well, we'll take your word for it? You know, the FAA requires audits of the airlines and the Department of Transportation, you know. Of course, they're in bed with the automakers, I think, too, but probably not to the degree that the FDA is in bed with the pharmaceutical companies, especially when pharmaceuticals get guys like Dick Armey to initiate laws to protect them from lawsuits. I mean, all we need now is for somebody to come up with a protection for Toyota, huh? Why don't we pass a special rider on some totally unassociated bill and say, well, you know, maybe you got killed in this car over here, but you can't sue auto manufacturers for getting killed in products that they manufacture and make and it kills you. All right, so there's my report. There's the aspartame update. This thing goes on to 1983. Commissioner Hayes approves NutraSweet for soft drinks. Hayes accepted a position as senior medical advisor to a Searle public relations firm. It was called Burston Marsteller, who represented NutraSweet and several major users. Hayes was paid $1,000 a day as a consultant. Hey, was Hayes on the take? He goes to work for the very people that he approved. Time to wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. Hey, I'm out of time again. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.